see what she's going to do.
So after nobody's interested in the 1887 guardianship of King Lombardo, Justice Cook has recused herself of this case, and the jury police have said it's in place of Justice Cook. Judge John Wise, who is the judge of the Court of Appeals in the 6th District, Chapter 31.
Changes that jurisdictional issue, or broadens the jurisdiction, I guess, of the probate court. Isn't that, would you agree with that? I mean, I understand your argument that the clearer, the pure jurisdictional issue is separate from whether there's a guardianship or not. But the facts we have give us a ward and a guardian. And then the question becomes, what is the jurisdiction, seems to me, of the probate court, even though there is a voting trust?
I'd answer the question this way. This is not a contest over whether or not the probate court has jurisdiction to control the affairs of its guardian. We're not saying that it doesn't. This is subject matter jurisdiction. The issue here is, does the probate court have jurisdiction to entertain disputes that involve statutory created voting trusts? In Shuffler versus Metcalf, this court ruled that probate courts didn't have jurisdiction over inter vivos trusts. The legislature responded and changed the statute and said, when the voting trust statute was on the books, everybody had public notice of it. They said, okay, we're going to give concurrent jurisdiction to probate courts over inter vivos trusts. They didn't say, as they had an opportunity to say at that time, legislature, that includes voting trusts, statutorily created voting trusts.
Would the voting trust terminate upon the ward's death?
No.
Even if it...
By
let me go on. If it was in the 10-year period,
yes,
it would not terminate by her death.
It would not terminate if the death is within the 10-year period, because the voting trust, by its specific terms, survived the death of the grantor.
And then it would terminate upon the 10-year period.
That's correct, by its own length.
Okay. That means then the probate court, following your answer to the chief's question and your argument, that even upon the ward's death, now instead of just having a guardianship there and a voting trust and a ward, we have a probate estate. We have an estate.
That's correct.
Probate court would not have any jurisdiction over that, the assets controlled by the voting trust, even in the case of a death, then.
It would have jurisdiction to administer the assets, but the mere fact that an asset is part of the estate doesn't, if so, create jurisdiction in the probate court to entertain all disputes relative to an asset. For instance,
I thought that was a probate court's job to determine who the asset. Always was when I did that.
Let me give you an example, and then I'll make my point clear. You have a contract entered into before the death of the decedent. The decedent dies. There is a dispute as to the validity of that contract, or the execution of the contract, or the performance of the contract. That contract can't be litigated in probate court.
Mm-hmm.
The probate court has absolutely no jurisdiction over that contract. The executor has got to go and bring the claim under that contract in common police court.
For completion of the contract.
That's correct. The probate court can supervise the executor as he's safe in his litigation, and whether or not he's going to settle it, under what terms. But the issue of where that is properly litigated, there is no dispute in the state that that's got to be litigated in common pleas.
Of course, there's no action here to be litigated in common pleas court unless there's an abuse of the voting trust agreement.
That's correct. And this wasn't brought that way. What the probate court here is decided that their guardian would be better off voting the shares than the trustee that was selected by the grantor. There was no contest based on a breach of fiduciary duty under the voting trust. It was in the best interest of the ward.
That seems to be the basis of the court's opinion, is that because it's in the best interest of the ward, we can break the reference to the trust. If the court can exercise a greater right than the ward would have, the ward would stay confident.
Absolutely. That's the part of this case. That now we've created a new body of law that will, for lack of better terms, I'll call it best interest of the ward. And sure, there are wards that make improper contracts, but they're enforceable, and then before they slide into marriage. One could say on that theory that anything that diminishes the ward's estate, whether it's legal or not, is not in the best interest of the ward, and therefore we need to have the right to terminate. Well, that simply isn't the law.
If there was an allegation that this voting trust was created through the use of fraud and or duress, would that have to be brought in the common police court?
Yes. And in fact, that issue was litigated in the common police court. Mm-hmm. In the court of common police, Judge Griffin found that was not so.
That's when Jean Lombardo was still competent.
No.
No, I thought she was.
Mm-hmm. No.
I mean, she created the voting trust when she was still.
That's correct.
But the challenge was after she became.
The challenge was as to the formation of the voting trust,
yeah.
And it was raised that she was incompetent at the time she did.
Right.
And that was litigated for 3 weeks, and it was decided, confirmed by the Court of Appeals, and this court refused to take jurisdiction.
So the Court of Appeals has been. But despite that ruling, we don't think it's in her best interest that we're going to ignore.
That's right. And they start out their opinion into the probate opinion as saying, we acknowledge this is valid and enforceable, but it's not the best interest. That's the essence of what was said. Now, what we assert is that two positions of jurisdiction. One, the broad grant of jurisdiction, one would say narrow grant of jurisdiction over inter vivos trusts, did not include a grant of jurisdiction over the voting trusts.
Now, give me, we've all read your briefs, and you've both spoken. This case is well briefed, by the way, on both sides. I really appreciate. We all appreciate good briefing.
And we appreciate that.
It's not an easy issue. The issues are not easy. We appreciate that. I'm speaking for myself, but give me your strongest argument on the jurisdictional argument. You've given one point that the legislature amended the statute to respond to a court decision saying that probate courts have inter vivos jurisdiction, jurisdictional inter vivos trust.
I'll make three arguments. The first one, you recite that they didn't explicitly grant jurisdictional voting trusts. The second one is a matter of policy. Do we really want probate courts carving out this piece of corporate governance, corporate legislation, and being able to litigate this piece of corporate governance legislation concurrently with the courts of common pleas? If you just look at it as a matter of policy, it doesn't make sound policy, and it really doesn't. And that's why I started this argument by saying that these disputes can and ordinarily do occur outside the context of a governance. So if two corporations get into it over a voting trust, do we really want to give them an opportunity, if you will, to form shop and go into a probate court, as opposed to the common pleas court, where there's no question about jurisdiction of a common pleas court to entertain these types of disputes? So as a matter of policy, it doesn't make good policy. I think those two reasons suffice, and if there are no more questions, I'd like to turn to the issue of the statutory construction of the word rather. The statute at issue 1701-49 expressly provides that voting trusts can be made irrevocable for a period of 10 years. That was done in this case. The probate court and the court of appeals never even mentioned in their decisions or tried to distinguish our argument that the word irrevocable means exactly that. It means irrevocable. It means not capable of revocation. They flew right by that and concluded that this was an inter vivos trust, and inter vivos trust can be terminated if there's no beneficiary, and therefore we can ignore the word irrevocable used by the legislature. Posit this. If you accept the construction that the Court of Appeals and the Common Pleas Court put on the word irrevocable, that word has no meaning, and every voting trust that's entered into that uses the word irrevocable is dead on arrival. And that simply can't be the law. The legislature had to mean what it said when it used the word irrevocable. The pernicious aspect of this case is well set forth in the brief of the amicus. This just isn't about voting trusts. This is about the ability of probate courts to authorize their guardian to revoke inter vivos trusts. That's where this is headed. And if this case is affirmed, the next step is, well, look at Lombardo. The probate court in that case has the authority to revoke an irrevocable inter vivos trust. And so now it's in the best interest of the ward to do this, and I'm going to substitute my probate testamentary intent, or dispositive intent would be a better word, for the dispositive intent of the grantor before the grantor slid into guardianship. If you affirm this case, you will scramble up probate law for a good time, and this won't be the only case you'll hear about. I'd like to observe the balance of the contest.
Thank you, Mr. Bridgewell. Mr. Sayre.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. My name is John Sayre. I represent Kelly County Lombardo. The Court of Appeals affirmed the probate court's common sense solution to a difficult problem. The probate court's solution was consistent with the statutory plan of the administration of guardianship estates and was well within the probate court jurisdiction as granted by the Ohio legislature.
Counsel, let me give you a slightly different question there, because language sent to the board to break an irrevocable trust is still incompetent. Let's say your ward is still incompetent to board the board. Enters into a real estate contract and sells you the land. Then get the best price for it, get the far less price. Becomes incompetent. Better offer comes along. There's a contract on the table to purchase land. Better contract is not the one for the board. And in this case, would the guardian have the right then to break that real estate contract to get an offer?
No, Your Honor.
Why not?
The facts of your hypothetical are distinctly different from the facts presented to the probate court in this case in the following respect. The document at issue was a trust. I agree that it is a form of contract. There is a specific common law principle applicable to trust contracts, if you will, and it provides, as stated in Mama versus Bank of Ohio, that where the settlor is the sole beneficiary, then in that case, the settlor at common law has the right to terminate that contract, even though it may be irrevocable, before its conclusion. That specific principle of common law, applicable to the voting trust which Sam Lombardo, in this case, drew, he dealt the hand, does not obtain with respect to your hypothetical of a real estate contract, which is a distinctly different form or type of contract. So the ruling in this case by the probate court and the affirmance by the Court of Appeals is specific to the fact of an inter vivos trust.
But you have the difference of sole beneficiary saying, now circumstances have changed, it's getting a lot nicer to me now, sort of changed my mind, changed my trust, and eventually after I've gone, it will go to somebody else versus the guardian. Overcoming what was clearly at the intent of the grantor and saying, now that's not the best decision. How can you expect your shares for after your company? Somebody else, the whole different idea of what's right and wrong, who should get what? Should you make that decision for you?
Well, I think, Your Honor, if I may, your question requires some explanation. Seems to be a misapprehension here with respect to the extent and scope of the probate court's order and the Court of Appeals' affirmance. Under the statutory construction or scheme, all power which the ward had but for incompetence passes to the probate court as superior guardian. That seems to me to be the fundamental precept of the statutory scheme. There is absolute authority in the probate court. The probate court then grants in its discretion to the guardian such powers as passed to it.
So
the guardian.
You would just agree with the other side that had he been alive, or had he been competent, he could not have changed his trust?
Had she, Jean Lombardo, been alive?
If she had stayed competent,
yes.
In year six, she had been most.
With the court order. As the sole beneficiary, Jean Lombardo, had she remained competent, could have applied to a court, be it a probate court or a common pleas court. There are concurrent jurisdictional aspects to each of those, and said, despite the fact that this document, this trust contract says it is irrevocable, I now wish to revoke it inasmuch as I am the sole beneficiary. No one else is hurt. The trustee cannot assert his interest as trustee to stop it. That is the right that existed in Gene Lombardo under common law and passed to the probate court as superior guardian. So there's no expansion.
You keep saying common law. Is the statute on revocable trust different?
The
statute allowing to revoke?
The voting trust statute establishes an inter vivos trust. The common law principle applies to irrevocable inter vivos trusts. It is set forth in MAMA. It is set forth in the Restatement of Contracts, or Restatement of Trusts, other trust treatises, which says that where the settlor of an inter vivos trust, designated as an irrevocable trust, is the sole beneficiary, that settlor has the right to terminate that trust despite the fact of its irrevocable nature. And that's all that the probate court did in this case. Believe it or not, I'm answering your question. The limit of the probate court's order in the Court of Appeals affirmance is to grant authority to take a further act. There is no self-executing aspect to the probate court's order at this point. Whether that further act of termination, should the need arise, be venue or jurisdiction in common pleas for a general division or probate court, who knows? It depends, I suppose. There would be a strong argument granted for jurisdiction in the probate court, but it's not, at this point, a fait accompli.
The counsel would they can work on. So what's the underlying common reason?
The war.
You're in the Supreme Court over family feud.
Yeah. Your Honor, I think that's right. It is ironic that we're here before this test body on something that could be described as a sibling rivalry. But
then you're telling us, well, even if the power is granted to terminate these voting rights, the guardian isn't necessarily going to do it. Isn't that what you just told us?
That is correct, but that's consistent with the statutory scheme. The revised code, section 2111, subsection
2. Am I terribly naive? Why would you fight all the way to the Supreme Court for a power for the guardian that he doesn't plan to exercise?
Well, Your Honor, clearly, as the respondent, I'm here not voluntarily, but I think that...
Well, you could dismiss.
I believe, Your Honor, that the authority that is granted to the guardian establishes or provides to the administration of the board's estate some fiduciary standards which are wholly absent in the voting trust. One compelling fact for the probate court and the Court of Appeals was the document itself establishing this inter vivos trust, in which the trustee is absolved from any fiduciary responsibility, is responsible only for quasi-criminal activity, may engage in self-dealing, which many courts in Ohio and in other jurisdictions have said is an absolute prohibition. A fiduciary self-dealing can't happen. The only times that the courts, by the way, have allowed that,
I'm asking some question. I guess it doesn't matter in terms of the action. I'm wondering what's going on. I mean, is this the probate judge wanting this power, or is there a real threat to this real estate?
At the time that this application was made to the probate court, There was a revolution, and the power to control an asset that controlled 200 acres of undeveloped land at the corner of Rockside Road and I-77 in Independence, Ohio, was considerably endowed. contract that had been presented by San Lombardo, which the probate court had stopped because it was not clear how this contract was going to affect the court's assets. So between the brothers, Sam Lombardo and Carl Lombardo, there was an eternal war, unfortunate as that may be. And the common sense solution by the probate court was to take the statutory structure available to it in the common law and appoint an independent guardian to protect this asset. And it was a real need to protect an asset. So it's not an abstract matter of the probate court arrogating power to itself.
I trust this son over the other. I trust him so much, and I want to give him this right for 10 years so that the other one can't get it. And that's what the guardian said when she created that. The board said because she became incompetent. And now you have some independent third party saying, yeah, it doesn't matter what she said, so change it.
Your Honor, I would again state that the change is not self-executing upon the authority granted to the guardian. There is clearly an intent on the part of the grantor, Jean Lombardo, to vest her trust in Sam Lombardo. However, the terms of the document compromise the duties that the trustee, the voting trustee, owes to the ward. And not only was the document an issue, there were facts before the probate court indicating that Sam Lombardo, while operating under a power of attorney, not having disclosed the voting trust, by the way, had taken his mother's money to initiate the action against Carl Lombardo. That was the reason that the probate court declined to appoint Sam Lombardo as guardian of Jean Lombardo's estate. There was self-dealing. He was not suitable as a court-appointed fiduciary, as that term is defined in 210901 of the revised. So having determined that Sam Lombardo was not an appropriate fiduciary for Jean Lombardo, having seen the voting trust with no fiduciary obligations stated in it, in fact, negative fiduciary obligations, if you will, stated in it, having been faced with questions of whether or not Sam's actions were appropriate to preserve the value of the estate, the probate court, under the case law construction, took an aggressive approach, as the statutory structure requires it to do.
That's a copy of those assets. Let me just get right down to another what concerns me when you see something like this one. That's answer that's been confirmed. If there is something going on where the party who has control is not doing due diligence, something to undermine the value of the assets, self-dealing as you described, that's one matter. Location you described, I assume this is an ordinarily valuable piece of property.
Correct.
At the same time, from where I sit, I see concerns of potential for probate judges to like, grab some power, and assign a piece of business to the friend of the probate judge. That does happen. You probably encountered we don't want to encourage the latter. We do want to provide a proper venue for folks to litigate issues where there is a failure to exercise due diligence and protecting assets. That's my question. Statement really is a question. Which is it?
The reliance within the statutory scheme.
I mean, this guardian does stand to make a decided fee, I guess.
Deputy would obtain an honor whether he had the authority to terminate or not, inasmuch as the beneficial interest of the shares was listed on the inventory as an asset of the estate. There's no issue here with respect to his fee based on the inclusion or exclusion of the asset. It's there. It's a probate asset.
Once he starts running the trust asset,
that
really starts the process.
I see that my time has expired. If I may?
Yeah.
Thank you. The further step will depend on facts that might arise that address exactly, I believe, your concern, and that is that there is not a fulfillment of a duty of diligence and fiduciary responsibility to the board.
And that's just
me. Should it occur, for instance, that Sam Lombardi would find a real estate deal that would pay creditors and remember a further excess in this case with the severe financial distress that Elman found itself in at the time. But if Sam Lombardi were to take an interest in an acquiring company, buy assets of L&M Properties Company at a reduced value, the board would have no right under the terms of the trust to permit sale deal.
Before that, I might be foreclosed. Is that hypothetical at this point, or is that
the threat existed in the form of a contract which was presented to the probate court prior to the initiation of the guardian's actions here.
Counsel, let me keep you long enough to ask you to take you back to the legal issue that's probably the most important one. Is can we hold that the probate court has jurisdiction in this instance without thereby holding it has jurisdiction in every voting trust case?
Yes, Your Honor.
How do we do that?
The distinguishing feature, it seems to be, to me, the specific terms of this voting trust, which posit the grantor as the sole beneficiary. It would have been a simple matter for the drafters of this voting trust to have said, in the event of my death prior to the expiration of the 10-year term, the beneficial interest passes to my heirs, my children, whoever she may choose. That did not occur. And in that draft, which again is Sam Lombardo's own feelings.
Well, his mother may not have been wise in agreeing to it, but she did, and she was confident. So that's the fact we have.
But the ruling in this case is limited to that fact situation because had there been other beneficiaries, had Gene Lombardo not been the sole beneficiary of the voting trust, then the right to terminate, which the guardian has, could not have occurred unless, and I will admit this, unless the other beneficiaries consented to the termination.
I may have some difficulty following the jurisdictional point there.
The jurisdiction.
So voting, we have a voting trust.
Right.
But this is different than the typical voting trust, is your point. Is that right?
Yes, I think that it has unique aspects. And the jurisdiction follows the authority granted to the guardian. There is exclusive jurisdiction of the probate court to control the conduct and direction of the administration of the estate by the guardian.
Well, but Mr. Britswa in the Forrest decision, I think they're free, says in effect you can't have it both ways. You can either probate court has jurisdiction over voting trusts or it does not. You can't sort of pick and choose which ones it does. It's a basic jurisdictional issue whether that this type of action can be brought in a probate court.
I would refer Your Honor to the two-step process. 211150 says that the guardian may act according to the revised code, the decisions of the court, or the orders of the probate court. 211150B says the probate court has all of the power the board has. So in order for the guardian to act, the probate court first has to authorize the guardian to act. That's the structure as I see it in 211150. The authorizing step is within the exclusive jurisdiction of the probate court per 2101-24. So the authorizing step is what happened here. The fact that it pertains to a voting trust, I agree with Mr. progress, which is something of a happenstance. And I reiterate my earlier comment that if and when the need arises for the guardian to act on the authority, where that action occurs may be either the probate court, which has concurrent jurisdiction of inter vitals trusts, or the general division of the commonwealth. Again, for 911.
Counsel, if I could just quickly, you made some points about the self-dealing potential of the language in the trust agreement that's here before us, but I thought I heard you say that, or at least opposing counsel said that this trust has already been approved as being valid and enforceable. Why does that become an issue if the terms of the trust agreement have already been found to be appropriate and acceptable?
The determination of the voting trust's validity disposed of the issues of fraud, duress, and competence to agree in the formation of the trust. The issue of self-dealing and the construction or the terms of the voting trust conflict with the role of the guardian to preserve and to protect. So the conflict here is a conflict between the guardian and his duties to preserve and protect the ward's assets versus a non court-appointed fiduciary. Chosen by the settlor, admittedly, but who has no real responsibility to the ward.
At the ward's decision that should be that way. Or at the settlor's decision it should be that way, who's also the ward.
Well, Your Honor, if I may, if there were a determination, and there's not, but if there were a determination that, in fact, the agreement for self-dealing were appropriate, and if the removal of any business judgment were appropriate, then I think there would still be a need for the guardian, for the probate court, to ensure in some manner or means that the ward's assets were not raped, swindled away by someone, and this is part of the evidence, motivated by ill will.
That's not the action before the court now.
Also fix himself.
I agree with that.
Okay, so that's a different issue that could be handled in common pleas, not the probate court.
Yes, if the guardian has the authority to bring it, which is what the probate court has done.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you,
Mr. Slater. Mr. Bisco, you've saved, take 30 seconds.
On the issue of sole beneficiary.
Yeah, the underlying predicate of his is that this is the sole beneficiary. She is not a voting trust. She's not the sole beneficiary, is she?
No. The trustee clearly derives benefits from the agreement, from the voting trust.
And that's why you enter into it. Okay.
So that premise is wrong. Secondly, what's happening now? The guardian, in fact, has been appointed with the Board of Trustees of Elmland Properties. He has not sought to exercise the so-called authority from the probate court or the voting trust. And in fact, the reason we're here is that the appellate decision and the underlying probate court decision is dead law. He's not even in court with it. And that's the only reason we're here. And finally, what really puts this thing in perspective is this. If there's self-dealing, if there's breach of fiduciary duty, this state has well-settled law about how you go about remedying that. And the remedy is not some new body of law that says you run to the probate court, and the probate court says, this is not in the best interest of the ward. Stun them. The remedy is you bring an action for breach of fiduciary duty. And you bring it where it's well settled and the court of common pleas. That's what's done. And that hasn't been done. There simply is no basis here to permit probate courts to arrogate to themselves power over voting trust and substitute their hand-picked guardian, the managing shares of South, that Gene Lombardo wanted for son Sam, the appellee here today.
Give you your time, Mr. President. Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion tomorrow.